Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm your host, Philip Wiley, and today I have Nenad Zarich joining. We've known each other from LinkedIn and Twitter, and we finally got to meet at Black Hat Europe last year in London. And so someone I've been wanting to invite to be on the show. You know, we get a lot of people that are practitioners working in the field, but then to have people on that have taken that journey a step further and started companies, built products, I think it's very important for people to learn those stories, to know what's possible. You're not stuck in the 9-to-5 if you don't want to. If you eventually want to gain these skills and do your own thing, it's possible. And people like yourself are a good example. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. So why don't you introduce yourself and kind of share how you got into your career, kind of share your career journey up to where you are now.
Okay. So hello, everyone. I'm Nenad. I started the journey in security like 13 years ago. And initially, it was like pretty like you don't have as much knowledge as you have now. So I must like I did like a lot of like forums. There was like a hack forums and that kind of stuff where I learned through some peers on what the security is about, and especially offensive security. That was like a really long time ago. And after a while, when I got to study, I got employed in a pen test service companies where I learned a lot in like the pen testing and like offensive security in general and testing web applications, networks. We had a lot of like also on-site network pen tests. And prior to creating Trickist, I worked in a biotech company, which is basically creating a platform with that workflow approach. And their users are creating the workflows to analyze biomedical data. So I was intrigued with it and kind of saw the appliance of that workflow approach in a security, where basically you don't need to worry about the infrastructure management, you don't need to worry about the installing of the tools, especially as there is a vast, like a lot of tools that you need to learn, especially the parameters of. So I saw that workflow approach could solve those problems and focus like users only on their creativity, on their executable mind maps. So basically that's how the idea for Trickist is born. And now we have the platform which is doing the automation of offensive cybersecurity.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting platform. I think it's really helpful, and I could really see the value to you take companies that you got junior pen testers and be able to provide that workflow for them is going to help them get up to speed quicker. So I see a lot of value. You know, it really seems like we've got so much work to do as pen testers that you have to figure out a way to automate things, do things faster and more efficiently to be able to keep up.
Yeah, surely.
And so during your career, did you kind of, what led you to your product? Was this based on some experience you had automating things as a pen tester?
Yeah, basically, I worked also as a bug bounty hunter. So kind of like I was frustrated, to be honest, with like terminal, like always doing the same stuff over again, especially in the recon phase. And I kind of initially that was like a web application just that I built for myself for the bug bounty purposes, where I don't need to install the tools and do all of the stuff altogether. I just input the domain name, IP address, and that kind of stuff, and execute workflows on click, which were interconnected. Like that was a really simple workflow for the bug bounty purposes. And like that generated a lot of data, and I saw basically that I'm getting more and more bounties. So I saw that opportunity in that interconnection between the tools that is automatic, and that kind of sparked the idea of actually creating the company and actually creating the product, which will provide everyone a possibility to interconnect the tools easily.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that too is you when you mention bug bounty, you see some of the most successful bug hunters out there. They are doing some sort of automation because you hear about them. They added a new bug bounty. Their scripts and stuff run overnight. They wake up the next day, look and see what they found, and then they can focus more on the actual, you know, more difficult areas of trying to find bugs, opposed to spending all the time on some of the little menial, less important tasks that are required that you have to have to perform the bug bounty.
Yes, like I think a lot of people, especially the people that are in the upper level of the bug bounties, like on leaderboards, have their own automation, their own methodologies, and automate really a lot of stuff. Of course, there are a lot of manual work to be done, especially on the web application, especially when you dive deeper into the web applications. And like from my experience, I saw that like you need to focus usually on a couple of programs that you're working on in a bug bounty, because you need to basically know their infrastructure well. And automation is helpful, of course, but you need to know how they actually work, like how their developers are pushing the code, how many infrastructure is changing over time. You need to have monitors around that. So any kind of thing that helps you get more bounties, you basically reverse engineer it to the automation back, and then again execute on, like as you said, like a nightly basis, and see in the morning if you scored something.
So yeah, it's interesting because it's one of the things that people I mentor and people I've taught, I always recommend bug bounties for a way to get real world experience, because try Hack Me, Hack the Box, that's a good way to get experience. But sometimes, you know, employers want to see real world experience, and that kind of carries forth when you're doing the interviews and you're able to talk through how you found certain bugs. So if someone's wanting to get started in pen testing or bug hunting, would you recommend starting with bug hunting to get that experience and bug bounty to move into pen testing?
Yes, absolutely. I think like at least 20 people, I said exactly that, like they want to get into the security. So firstly, I guess they need to decide on those two paradigms of like offensive and defensive security. And if they're up to all the offensive security, I think that like at least one bounty, and I don't think it matters on which severity it is, will bump them up in that line of interviewing and getting the job. Because that way the employers could actually see the experience, that they know what they're doing. They learned probably a lot, because like it can be depressing but also rewarding. So if you get a bounty, I think your kind of CV doesn't need to have anything else except for like I actually find a bug. And especially if that's like some of the big companies that have bug bounty program, like Fortune 500 companies.
So how would you document something like that on your CV or LinkedIn profile?
Mm-hmm. I would like add a link, and especially I think it's good like that companies provide that Hall of Fame pages where they like explicitly say username or name and surname of people that found the bugs. So basically that is like a proof of the people that are applying to the job that they found something. And especially on the LinkedIn, like add all of your profiles, like from HackerOne background, Integrity, SV Hack, or any kind of other platform there is. So they can just click on it, see it, and verify that you're actually doing and finding the vulnerabilities.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I've also seen some people put their CVEs that they've discovered too. So what's your advice around CVEs? How can someone get into that? I'm seeing that's a, I guess in my opinion, a CVE is more valuable than a certification, because you're able to find something that no one's known about. You're able to find a new vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. So like we created that repository, which is finding all of the proof of concepts for various CVEs, and it's updating it daily. So when I got through it, I saw that there is a lot of like products which are not really popular, like in terms of like the usage, but could get their own CVE as they are like institutional or from a big company, but not used much. So for the people that want to like find their first CVE, I guess they could scrape that like kind of repositories like to find where the CVEs are, because like as you probably know, the product that has one, two, or as many CVEs usually have more. So they can just pick and choose the specific product they are interested in, and basically just dive deep into it, install it on their local machine or some external infrastructure, log in, and just pick and choose. And also, there are a lot of possible bypasses for the already found CVEs. So you find like a cross-site scripting, you see it, or SSRF or any kind of vulnerability, and then you just try to replicate it on a fixed version and try to bypass it on a fixed version, because it can get you additional CVE if that's not properly fixed. So you have a starting point to get CVE more quicker. And I think CVE might be a upper level of a bounty. Like if you get a CVE, then you're like from the eyes of the employees, maybe like let's call it better employee, better security engineer than just having a bounty.
Great advice, and good to hear your point of view on that. So when someone's wanting to learn to be a pen tester or a bug bounty hunter, what's the education recommendation you'd have for someone wanting to learn how to do that?
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like it's just like, I think more part of a character of the guy that wants to get into security, not much of the education, but like if he just want to enter into the security, I guess like there is a lot of like educational content and materials he can go through, especially on like courses, YouTubes, books that he can like dive deep into. But also he don't like to go only onto one, like just to read stuff and don't do practical stuff. So I would suggest that the start would be to maybe use some vulnerable web application and then dive deep into like that you already know it has an issues. So he can actually see how the vulnerabilities are exploited through courses that are practical. So I would go more into the practical examples and seeing how things are done, either on vulnerable apps or going through, for example, the HackerOne reports, especially, and looking through how people engaged in it. And the main point also would be that he must think like as a bad guy, like how would that bad guy exploit this issue? And that must be also a pretty creative process. And they should not be discouraged if they don't find a vulnerability, because like, it's a pretty, they must endure through all of that process, and then eventually they will find it. And I think a lot of bug bounty hunters are also saying that you must go through the pain of not finding the vulnerability for some time.
Yeah, one of the things too, I think some people get discouraged because they find duplicates, but yes, if you're finding a duplicate, at least you're finding something, and it just gets, it's going to be a matter of when you find the next one before someone else does.
Yes. Yes, duplicates are pretty frustrating, but yeah, they are proof that you're on a good path, possibly. You need to go deeper then and try to find new ones.
So as far as someone wanting to learn this, would you recommend that they start out using a tool like Burp Suite to do their web app pen test?
Yes, initially, like when I started, we used like Tamper Data. I think it was a Firefox extension, which is basically just...
That.
Yeah, which is just basically intercepting the request, and you don't have repeater, you don't have basically anything around it. So yeah, Burp Suite is a good starting point, but prior to that, probably to learn about the HTTP, you know, types of methods of HTTP requests, like get, post, and how it works, like maybe learn more about the JSONs, because like a lot of A lot of like web applications are based on REST APIs. So there is a lot of like JSON requests that needs to be checked. So Burp Suite and like any kind of proxy environment which you can look through the request. They can even use Wireshark like to intercept and to see requests. But Burp Suite has a lot of flexibility on like working with web applications. So yeah, I would recommend Burp Suite like as a main tool for intercepting requests.
So what do you think about OWASP Zap? Have you used that much? Do you think that's a good proxy to use as well?
I didn't use it like I use more of command line than the UI because like we are trying to automate a lot of stuff, so it's not connected with the graphical interface. I think it is also good, especially it is coming from the open source community and it's updated constantly and it has like a CI/CD. So I think it's a pretty good product. But like, of course, people could use both Burp Suite and OWASP Zap in parallel as they have kind of different approaches, as sometimes Burp finds something that Zap doesn't, or in contrary, like Zap finds something that Burp doesn't.
Yeah, something else too, I just thought about, we're thinking open source tools. So what about like for reconnaissance, do you think this is the area sometimes people don't do enough reconnaissance and it kind of prevents them from finding bugs?
Yeah, I think like executing just the tools that are like everybody executes is not enough. You need to dive deep into the infrastructure. Like, for example, you find you get all of the subdomains for recon, like getting all of the host names for a specific domain, and then you might go into the environment, see if there is something dev.example.com, and then go dive deep into the dev.example.com, because like if you're working in a company and you're deploying stuff, like if you're a security engineer or a developer, you're always pushing the stuff to the production and deploying the stuff to the production. And like, it's really random how engineers put their code and their web applications out there. So when you see the output of a tool that is doing the recon, either for host names or any kind of recon, dive more, like think about like how that team that is pushing those applications look like, how they think, what the technologies they are using. So that might provide you more insight and possibly not duplicate. And you just think about like how people behave, and also do it in a timely manner, like over and over again, every day, every week, every month, so you can see how that infrastructure is changing. Not just like execute the tool, use the output, execute the second tool, because like that's probably what everybody is doing, like either in automated manner or like newcomers that are just executing the tools first time.
Yeah, it's that pretty interesting stuff there. I mean, I kind of found out about bug bounty after I've been pen testing for a while. So it was really hard to spend much time doing bug bounty because I could do side pen tests and make money. But, you know, one of the things I think is advantage of bug bounties is it's kind of like comparing it to hunting and fishing or whatever. If you are hunting for sport or fishing for sport, you're probably not going to do as well as someone that has to do it for survival. So
yes,
you know,
yes,
for exactly. Bug bounties, if this is your main income and you're not getting paid to do it all the time, because you know, pen test, you're paid for the pen test, whether you find anything or not. So that's one of the things I've seen. And I've seen people with that bug bounty experience, you know, people that do that are better than just, in most cases are better than just your typical pen tester.
Yes, and I'm a really big fan of fishing. I have my roads in a car always. So one of the reasons why is that is probably that's kind of the same basically methodology as with fishing. You are trying to find something, you don't know where it is and how it is, but you're like you're going like for a 6 hour, 8 hour fishing, and it might happen that you don't get it, like you don't caught any fish, but you continue, and when you get it, the whole like pain and suffering on trying to get it gets its reward. So you are again like motivated to do it again and continue pushing. So it's also connected, of course, with the survival and maybe some sort of instinct where you think vulnerabilities might be or where you think fish might be.
Yeah, that's very, very, very good point. And then you think, you know, just that persistence and just like fishing, you continue, you'll find something. But if you give up too soon, and that's kind of one of the things that offensive security for years with their OSCP, they always say try harder, which some people get upset over. But it's a good lesson to teach people, because if you try harder, there's just one of those times when you're doing a pen test, you're trying to exploit something. And if you just kind of give up when things get difficult, you're never going to find anything. But if you kind of learn to keep pushing and be persistent, you're going to be more successful.
Yes, it's hard. It's hard to like explain that when you're like trying to exploit something for quite some time and you don't get it. But if you continue, it will pay off surely. I think that persistence is the key on getting the vulnerabilities, bounties, or either in a pen test, because like, when you're doing the pen test, you must make sure that the other guy wouldn't have more time than you to catch a vulnerability. So you must assure your client or company that you're working for the pen test that you did everything possible to find a vulnerability and report it.
Very cool. And so for someone that's wanting to get into web app pen testing or bug bounty, do you recommend learning any kind of development? Learning anything JavaScript? You'd mentioned understanding JSON. So, do you recommend learning those technologies to be better?
Of course, it's kind of like the more you know, the better. But like, I think that you can learn by an example. Like, you can just do some like tests on the environment and see what's up. And when you don't know what something is about, then you just search for it, especially as you now have the ChatGPT and that kind of services, which could provide you like really fast with an explanation what's that about. So you find some JavaScript code, you don't know anything about JavaScript, you can paste it to ChatGPT, or you can like just dive deep into it, execute it on your own local machine or your own local web application, see what it does.
You know, that really makes a lot of sense too, because one of the things when people think of things from a network pen testing perspective, you know, you realize, and most people that have worked in IT or cybersecurity before they moved into pen testing, you get familiar with those platforms, and sometimes you think you forget about, okay, I understood how that worked. I'm going into web app pen testing, but I'm not learning anything about coding. I'm just purely trying to use the tools. It just seems like it just makes sense if you're going to be good in that area to understand how the code works if you're going to be successful.
Yeah, and also like from my experience, how I got a lot of bounties is like seeing the behavior of the application and trying to create a dummy code which is doing the same behavior based on the technology I know that web application is running on, or like what kind of method is there. And especially, for example, you can see the response in a web application, search for it on Google and see that's some sort of like already known library that is being used. So then you just derive that part of the code that is executing on your user input and try to fuzz it, try to see how you can make it break, or you can extract the data. And that way you will learn a lot and also possibly find a vulnerability.
Just how difficult is it for someone to make a living? I mean, there's people out there that do that, to just do nothing but bug bounties. How difficult is that? And is that possible that with anyone that really wants to do that full time, to be able to do bug bounty full time and make enough money?
I think it's pretty difficult, but not like if you're finding vulnerabilities, then there are a lot of like other stuff which are connected, especially when you're living from the bounties, which is like companies could take a long time to reward you with a vulnerability you found. Sometimes it takes even two 2 years, 3 years. So it kind of like is connected with the security, especially if you have like a family to feed, the kids and that kind of stuff. So you must be really, you must do probably a large scope applications, or you must do it in a way. I saw a lot of people do on the upper level is that they find a vulnerability in a specific product like CVE and do it on a large scale. And then they chase the bounties that nobody knows about. Like basically that's a 0 day on a public bug bounty programs, which could score you the reward, and then you move to another product which is used by a lot of companies, find CVE and then scan all of it. So those are kind of two approaches I see where you can make the living off of it, but you must like keep on track on like your income based on the response time of a bug bounty platform, reward time that is needed to fix the bug. And also I would suggest that maybe like apart from that, you do also a security like pen testing services, which are kind of more focused. You know, the scope sales process comes in, but basically if you have a lot of experience, you can like a lot of people, as there is a shortage in this industry, there is a lot of security pen testing which can be done.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting field, and that's the good thing about the web app. It seems like there's more opportunity there opposed to sometimes network pen tests, because some companies require you to be on site, which makes it difficult. One of the things I really loved about Bug Bounty, I used to be a Bug Crowd ambassador. One of the things I really loved about Bug Bounty is the way it's helping people in some regions of the world that don't have opportunities, but Bug Bounty is global. So you can pretty much do Bug Bounty from anywhere, and just seeing some of the success it's brought to people and prosperity.
Yes, surely. And like, I think there is a lot of countries where you basically get, you can get like your yearly salary with one bounty, which is pretty exciting and pretty cool.
Yeah, something else too. What bug bounty platforms do you recommend for people that want to get into bug bounty?
Like any kind of like, I would not connect it too much with the platforms, more with the programs. So you need to figure out which program you want to target on, and then see on which platform it is. Usually there is also a security takes there. Directive on those websites, especially those that are popular, which show you on which platform a specific company is hosting their bug bounty program. And some of them also have their own kind of self-hosted bug bounty programs where they do it by themselves, which could be also interesting, because like there is a smaller amount of people which are testing their environments, because like they don't go through some official bug bounty programs. But like, of course, HackerOne, BugCrowd, Integrity, yes, we have like those are the usual ones that I recommend also going to.
So it's probably a good idea to be, because you said focus on the programs and not the platform. So I guess it would be ideal for someone to sign up for all those platforms. And
yes, and like list and see what interests them. And also I think that it is also important that you're testing some product that you know how it works. So it might be connected to like something that you already did in the past, like developed some sort of similar product, or you know how it works. Like for example, if you're using Uber for driving, then you go to Uber and you know how it actually works, that is you are sending the request for the driver goes back and that kind of stuff. So you know how to exploit it when you know how it works. So firstly know how it works and then try to exploit it.
Very good. One of the things too you'd mentioned earlier, and I wanted to remember to do this, to discuss this. So you'd mentioned ChatGPT. So what do you think about ChatGPT and AI in general for automating pen testing?
Mm-hmm. So I immediately bought the ChatGPT when it came out. So I'm a big fan, especially because like in automation, there is a lot of like, and I heard that a lot, I made some messy bear script to do stuff for me, in terms of the automation. So that bash script could be easily made with ChatGPT, especially it is not long. So ChatGPT would not break in terms of like the how many lines of the code he needs to write. So you can just write, I'm using it for that, like write me a bash script which will parse me whatever kind of output, like either JSON or any kind of raw output, or you can even paste the output in ChatGPT and say, provide me with bare script, which will output me, which will create the output in this exact format. And usually it works well. So you can just plug it in into your automation. So I think for that kind of automations, especially connected to bare scripting, it's pretty valuable, and I already used it a lot and see the value in that kind of approach.
Yeah, I've been enjoying playing around with it myself and just seeing what people are doing with it. What really got me interested, I guess, towards the end of last year, I saw someone wrote, I want to write a recon script using these tools, and it created a bash script. And I thought it was kind of cool how it even went through, part of the code was to install the different tools and then run the script. And so that was pretty nice. And once I saw that, I just thought, yeah, I've got to learn more of this. And I've been enjoying using it for my podcasts. So my podcast episodes, when I'm writing the summaries, I just export the transcript, put it in a ChatGPT and ask it to build a summary. Yeah. And then I need a 200 character or less summary to write that. And then as well as the title, and it makes my workflow and job a lot easier. So definitely has been very helpful in writing too.
Yes, surely.
So we're getting down towards the end of the episode. Is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners before we end?
That, like, as we mentioned, like previously, that in the security, you must be persistent. You must be interested in like getting to know how things work. You must be interested in how to break things that work. And to be like really able to become an expert in the field, you probably need to think like a bad guy in order to have that kind of creativity as the bad guys would do. Because like usually people are doing that, doing the pen testing and bug bounties for fun and for money also, but the bad guys have the motivation like usually the money. So you need to be better than them, and you need to learn a lot. And of course, we didn't mention that, but there is a lot of like imposter syndrome happening in the community. And like, don't get dragged by it, because like you need to just continue learning and seeing what other people do, implement that into your methodology, and you'll become better at it.
Well, thanks for sharing your story and your advice. It was really interesting to get to hear about your background, and always great to speak with you. And I look forward to the next time we get to see each other in person. But sure. But thanks for joining. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.